Welcome to the Spike Feed, your leading Magic the Gathering podcast. What is up? My name is Curtis, and I'm just your typical Spike. On the line with me, V-neck, slim fit, in tow, my good buddy, producer extraordinaire Cameron McCoy. How you doing, friend?
I am great, man. How about you?
I'm good. We're kind of settling into this summer thing where the news is slightly lighter. We're getting to play a little bit more. I should say I'm getting to play a little bit more. But I'm real good, man. I'm caffeinated, which is what counts. So
yeah,
you and I both got to play quite a little bit this week. Though you got to play in person. You got to play some paper Magic. What'd you do?
I did get to play some paper, yeah. So the first thing I got to play was I'm still in like this Dominaria sealed league that my shop has going on, and it's still just scratching every single itch that I want in limited. I didn't get to draft this week, which I was planning on doing like on a random Tuesday, and it just never fired off for me. But Dominaria sealed league is still good. I'm still running like that green black splashing red Jund thing with elves, and it you know, like with only having like 60 something cards, you know, in my sealed pool, dude, it's it does the job, and it's super fun. So I mean, second week in a row, my opinions on Dominaria haven't changed. It's still really fun, still really good. So yeah, there's that.
We have the freshest takes.
Yeah.
Dominaria, yeah, good.
Yeah. 2 weeks in, good.
Infinity War, good. God of War, good. I mean, no wonder people come to us
for
this.
They come to
stuff.
Us for yeah. this information, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Insightful. So yeah, I'll be playing some more Dominaria through the next few weeks, and I will hopefully be adding more cards to my sealed pool, which will be super fun. And yeah, see what that does. In addition to that, I was able to play Legacy, and kind of a short night for me, but I was able to, I picked up, what's her name? Kes, Dissident Mage, which is the commander card that has flying, 3/4 toughness. It's a wizard. And then during each of your turns, you essentially get to do a Snapcaster. You get to cast something that's in your graveyard, and then it goes into exile. And having that recurring Snapcaster ability on the top of your turns is so good. Like, you like casting a Hymn to Turok and then having Kes on the battlefield and then being able to recast that Hymn to Turok. So good. It saves you against burn. Like, I mean, I can't get over like how good discard in that sense, where you're not thought seizing, but you're able to just make them remove two cards. Super, super good.
It probably is just god-awful for combo decks as well. Probably the slower combo decks like Show and Tell.
Yeah, yeah. Anything where, like, if you can kind of grind them out by that turn. I mean, you're running Deathrite Shamans as well, so you're able to get Kes out on turn three sometimes. And if you're able to do that, you can grind them out, just outvalue them, because you're running Preordains, Ponders, Brainstorms, and then, you know, a slew of discard. It's really solid. This was a deck that I think was in the top eight 2 weeks ago during that European Legacy event.
Was it Birmingham? Yeah.
Birmingham. Yeah. Was that it? Okay. And yeah, it's super good. The other thing that's interesting is that this is favoring Preordains over Ponders, which, you know, there's a lot of debate as far as like if that's like the right choice. And while there is maybe like one time where Ponder would have been more beneficial for me, you know, being able to shuffle or look at the three cards, there's many times where it's like, ugh, like brainstorming and knowing that those two cards are going directly onto the bottom, and then being able, like, and then scrying those to the bottom through three Preordained is pretty good. Yeah, so I'm really curious, like, with all those Legacy aficionados out there, if I'm sure it's deck dependent as well, but
so excuse me, Cameron. I'm going to check the Legacy handbook.
Yeah.
Okay. Flipping through. Okay. Preordain. Okay. It says here that Preordain is better. Rule of thumb, by the way.
Oh.
Preordain is better when you run less fetch lands. Ponder is better with the presence of a fetch land. Okay. Closing that book.
Done.
All right. That's what the official Legacy player handbook says.
I need to get one of those handbooks, by the way.
Yeah, it's got all kinds of great nuggets in there, like never ban Brainstorm ever or quit the format. You actually have to take that blood oath before you're allowed to get the Legacy Players Handbook.
Yeah,
defend Brainstorm at all costs. that's typically what people... I mean, Preordain sees a lot more play in those kinds of combo decks.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them are much less fetch-oriented, like the aforementioned Show and Tell. Preordain is a lot better in that deck because you're not fetching as often. Now, Storm, of course, uses Preordain, but Storm will take all the one-mana blue spells it can get its hands on. It just gives no craps.
Yeah.
So, but did you have a good night with it?
Yeah, I did. I'll definitely be playing this deck some more. I took literally the list that I saw from that top eight and just, I had everything was like identical. And I think I want to kind of tweak with it. It's one of those things of like Deathrite Shaman. It's absolutely necessary in the deck, but I still just sometimes don't enjoy playing that, especially because there's so much Deathrite in my shop that I just hate those Deathrite Shaman mirrors where they're playing Grixis Delver or Bug Control or whatever. It's just like, okay, I'm kind of done with it. Not that I think it needs to be banned. It's just like that's the card that I don't really want to be playing myself. So, but it's necessary. It's like a necessary evil in that sense. So, overall, I had a really good time. Kes is great. I would say not Leovold great, but good. She does exactly what she should be doing, which is just casting him the Turoks every single turn, which is awesome.
So, Cameron, I want your Legacy opinions on a few things.
Mm-hmm.
So, as you know, over the next month, I'm going to be building Miracles. That's going to become my Legacy deck that I'm going to have stashed away. Going to be selling some of my stuff to kind of get into that, and I'm pretty excited, mm-hmm. right? Because I feel like it's a deck that I can port in a lot of ways. However, there are two versions of this deck, okay? And I don't know how familiar you are with this. There's one version that plays Monastery Mentors,
mm-hmm.
Does not play Counterbalance, does not play the Susang, does not play the enchantment that allows you to look through a certain number of the top cards. And then there's another version that does play Susang, that plays Entreat the Angels, that plays Counterbalance, that does not play Monastery Mentors.
Mm-hmm.
So I want your opinion, not just because, I value it a little bit, but also, if we're being super honest, the next time I play Legacy might be at your shop.
Yeah.
So I want your outlook. What do you think I should do in a vacuum? I'll probably end up getting the cards for both.
Like having like both alternatives is probably best because you might get bored with whatever. I think I would go the Monastery Mentor route, but that's just me with my play style. Like the super long, grindy counterbalance where you're just locking them out and you don't care how many turns it takes to win. You're just waiting to get your Jace or waiting to get your Angels. Not really totally my playstyle. I prefer like the Monastery Mentor route where you're maybe being a little bit more proactive and maybe a little bit more interactive, I guess. But that's just me. Like, I'm sure both options obviously are super strong and super good right now, but Mentor has always been like a pet card of mine that I've liked, and I've never found a good shell for him. But I think it's still a super strong deck that you should check out, or a card that you should check out.
I don't think any card's a better indicator of how busted Modern is. I mean, you're talking about a deck or a card that was good enough for Vintage, is good enough for Legacy, but is too slow for Modern.
Yeah.
Like, just stew on that for a minute, you know? I don't know how many Modern players tell me that their perception is the older the format, the faster it gets.
Mm-hmm.
You just think, clearly you've never played against lands, right?
I was going to say, Legacy, man, lands versus Miracles. Woo!
That's what the kids call a barn burner, mm-hmm. right? I'm building, I'm pricing, I'm doing all that stuff. So much of my enjoyment of Legacy is the pursuit right now, than the execution.
Half of it, for sure.
And, I could buy into one or the other on Magic Online and try and play it that way. But, and I know you've run into this a little bit, I just don't enjoy Legacy on Magic Online.
Mm-hmm.
It's something about, A, it's a competitive league only. The league takes a while to fire. The player base is incredibly spiky compared to a tournament, even like a 40-man that I might go to.
Yeah.
And part of the sell of the Legacy environment is the community. They're just so cool, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's a bunch of good dudes and gals. So the other thing I want to talk about is Arena. So I've been grinding away at Arena. Didn't draft this weekend because it's Rivals of Ixalan, and I kind of would prefer to forget about that set forever. So just been playing that same, you know, I dropped in, what was it, $50 last week,
mm-hmm.
and I've been playing that deck, and it's blue-white historic. I don't play straight blue-white control. A lot of the straight blue-white control deck is very viable online because Amonkhet's there, so you could play Second Sunrise. But I'm playing against a lot of black-red aggro variations on that. Now, the decks are nearly as strong because there's no Kaladesh, so no Heart of Kirin. But in general, just had a great time. I'm just the more we sit and think about Teferi, and I know articles have been written about this week, the more I think that might be the best Planeswalker control Planeswalker since Jace, like the Mind Sculptor.
Yeah.
Like, I think he's creeping up on better than Gideon, you know, 5-mana Gideon, better than 6-mana mm-hmm. Elspeth. Like, I think he's going to pass those, which is a really high bar, guys. Like,
it's kind of crazy to think, like, 6-mana Elspeth might have been, like, the last great Planeswalker in a control deck. I mean, like, that was actually you wanted to play. It's crazy to think that, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, look, you can play 4-mana Gideon in black-white control.
Sure,
you can play
Omnix. Sure.
It's like, there have all these kind of variations or flavors of that Planeswalker. 4 to 5 mana makes a guy. And look, nobody's saying anything bad about Gideon, Ally of Zendikar, okay? Great control card. Gideon of the Trials, also great control card. I think 5-mana Gideon is crazy underrated because of what he was in Standard. Mm-hmm. I think is a little bit out of memory now, but he was the one that would create the Jace lock. Like, you would plus with Gideon and then just brainstorm with Jace and YOLO, right?
Yeah.
So anyway, it's an interesting thing to think about, but Teferi is reaching that level. He is crazy good. I'm glad I have him on Arena. We'll just say that because I don't know how many times I go Arena plus, and then the opponent insta-scoops. And, it's a good time. So that's kind of where we're at. Now, we're going to get out of this segment. We're going to come back. I want, obviously we're going to talk about announcement today, but I also want to kind of dig into this other format that's popped up. So we'll be right back. We'd like to thank a few of our patrons for helping to support the show. Ben Jacobs, Seth Anderson, and Andrew McDougall, you guys are so awesome. Thank you for continuing to help us out. If you'd like to become a patron, go to spikefeed.com and click the donate button. All right, Cameron. So announcement day happened. And there's only one, like, there's a bunch of casual products, and they're making a product for the Chinese market, which I think is super awesome. So there's some other little details in here. But I just really wanted to focus on one thing, and that is returning to Ravnica, the third go-round. Ravnica forever, if you will,
mm-hmm.
to use a Batman reference. So I guess the next one after this would be Ravnica and Robin. What a twist that would
be. Oof, man, yeah. Unplayable, we'll say that. But
yeah. I hope Arnold's in it. What's your initial thoughts on this? First of all, I should also say, three standalone sets that happen to take place in Ravnica. We're getting 5 guilds in one, 5 guilds in another, and they're not telling us about the third one. So what do you think, man?
Cool. Like, I think this is great. Ravnica was like one of the, when I was just starting to get into Magic, I think I went with you down in Kansas City to like a pre-release for Return to Ravnica. And it was super interesting. You know, I was not familiar with this, like with the world at all, but it was cool. There's some great cards, obviously, Bob, you know, being one. And then if we go to Return to Ravnica, some other really, really amazing cards that are stalwarts in Modern and Legacy and were great in Standard. So I'm interested to see what they do with those mechanics, if they bring them back, you know, and if we have something that will be fun, I guess. So, I mean, how do you follow up after Dominaria? I don't know. I mean, this seems like maybe the logical follow-up, just because so many people seem to like Ravnica. I mean, maybe Ice Age would, like, if they returned to Ice Age or something, would be awesome, but, right.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, but whatever. Well, yeah. I don't really have a strong affinity for Ravnica itself, but I know that some of the cards that exist, and I would be excited to see some of those maybe return.
Yeah, dude, you always have to think about things in terms of people's eras, because I think you would be the lone person genuinely excited about returning to Theros.
True.
You're like, it's a reference to Eidolon and the Great Revel.
It's so good.
I mean, dude, admit it. If there was a Courser of Crucifix reprint in Standard, you'd be all in on that.
Who wouldn't be? Yeah.
It's a good card. But no, dude, look, I like you. I have that weird, so I was just buying packs casually for first Ravnica. Like, I think I bought, like, a starter in a couple sets. Mm-hmm. Because I had quit, become a tabletop player, kind of casual player, and then had come back to competitive. So I was aware of Ravnica, but not super into it. Then RTR, I was definitely playing Standard a lot at that point. And I actually really liked, because I think the dialogue for this is going to be people saying, oh, Return to Ravnica was great, Gatecrash and Dragon's Maze, not so much. Mm-hmm. Let's not repeat that. I would say this. I definitely am a Gatecrash apologist. I actually liked that set. I don't think it was amazing, but I don't think it was terrible. Dragon's Maze was a bad constructed set, and the draft was a mess that I thought was fun, because it was just gold cards and multicolored cards everywhere, and I think it really lended itself to a casual shop environment. I know a lot of competitive players didn't like it, because if you get into things like signals and color passing and all that, it was kind of a tough nut to crack, if not completely uncrackable. Whereas for the shop, everybody always just drafted five color or four color, and you kind of had a nice time. This feels like a little bit, what's the word I'm looking for? Like 25th anniversary. What's another thing we could do besides go back to Dominaria? I got it. Mm-hmm. Go back to Ravnica. I hope it's good. I do feel like, whenever you tell us, okay, every set's going to be standalone, and then you're like, on this Ravnica thing, we're just going to go three sets.
Yeah, right, yeah.
It genuinely feels like they sat down in a meeting and go, okay, every time we've done Ravnica before, it's been in three sets. Uh-huh. How the heck are we going to do this? And somebody says, well, we don't have to. we don't have to do it in one.
We can spin it however we like.
Yeah. What this new policy does is let us do whatever we want.
Yeah.
And that's fine. You know, whatever. Yeah, I think it's kind of irrelevant one way or the other. But I think for the people that are into the lore specifically, this is going to be a pretty exciting set. I mean, I know the Legacy community wants that Deathrite reprint, because they want more reprints.
There's just not enough Deathrites out there. So
yeah, we can maybe get some more.
Uh-huh.
Though, I'm trying to think of the reprints that I would want. I mean, I would not be stunned if Shocklands are back.
I think Shocklands would be like the obvious thing. It's about time, and if Modern continues to be a thing, you're going to, I think, need Shocklands in the wild.
Yeah, we might get Signets as well.
Sure.
Or some variation thereof. I think Dark Confidant would be interesting.
Yeah. I mean, it's once again, it's like a card that you rarely see in Modern, you know. Still has a place in Legacy, but not the way it used to. So I think it would be fun to see what it did in Standard again.
Yeah. And honestly, if you build in safety valves well enough, or build the deck, you know, if you power things properly, it won't take over. It'll just be a really great Standard card, which I think is what people want, you know?
I mean, just think of like a Bob and a Karn, you know, in the same deck, where you're just like generating that much mana advantage, or that much card advantage. Ooh, so good.
Yeah, dude. But, if straight burn is good enough, then Bob becomes pretty bad, you know?
Yeah.
So, it's interesting. All right, so, Cameron, I want to talk about old formats.
Mm-hmm.
So this kind of popped up on my radar. I think Joel Larson's Twitter mentioned it. Magic Mike's talked about it. And I wanted your impression. So I will be the first to admit that I underestimated, not that it's lighting the world on fire, but I thought Old School would be a total blip on the radar that would go away. Mm-hmm. But it's stuck around. It's a side event for invested players at a lot of GPs. There's certainly a scene for it on the East Coast where there's a lot of old format stuff. And it's obviously impacted prices just a touch on some of this on these things. But now there's this format that's floating around Europe called Pre-Modern, okay? And it is fourth edition to Scourge.
Okay.
So I want to know your thoughts on this, man. Did you look at this and think, oh, God, not another format? Or are you likely to give this a shot if it happens? Like, where are you at?
Well, I feel like my shop, like this seems like something a lot of guys at my shop, a lot of legacy slash vintage people would be interested in trying, just because, you know, sometimes people will show up to the shop playing the most random absurd decks that might have been like legacy playable in 2004 and have just since gone by the wayside, right? This looks cool. Like, I'm just like running through the deck list and there's just so many things that look fun. I mean, like, you know, counterspells, impulses, but no brainstorms. It's so interesting to see, like, some of these decks exist. So, like, there's this four-color control deck, and I'm like, I have, I think, almost all of these cards. I could do this. This would be super fun. So it looks interesting, and I would definitely, if it's, like, you know, Popper at my shop or, you know, Frontier or something like that. Those things do fire every once in a while where, you know, you might get an event that goes once. And if it's super popular, maybe it'll go again. These are all interesting cards. And I mean, I'm not going to go out of my way to buy certain things that might be way too expensive now. But if I have close to something, I would definitely check this out at my shop.
Yes, a bunch of these decks are crazy affordable, too, by the way. So, like, if you look at this Survival of the Fittest deck, I think the most expensive card in the whole thing is Survival of the Fittest. Mm-hmm. Maybe Bloodstained Mire. I mean, a lot of this stuff is cheaper, kind of mid-tier stuff. So, for those of you who don't have an encyclopedic knowledge of the formats, let's just say this. Old School MTG is the original set, alpha, beta, whatever you want to say, onto Fallen Empires. This is kind of the late 90s to early aughts, okay? All old border stuff. They do have a ban list. There are fetch lands, but there are not fetchable dual lands, right? Because you don't have Ravnica and you don't have the revised dual lands. So your mana bases end up being the Ice Age pain lands, which is super strange, along with fetch lands or things like City of Brass, Reflecting Pool, Mishra's Factory. This is squarely in my era of playing competitive Magic the first time around. And I just, like, I thought, oh, God, another old format, whatever. First of all, the website is alarmingly nice. Like, wow, guys.
Great job.
Get in touch with Wizards. But secondly, I just have, I don't think it's just nostalgia. I think these would actually be fun decks to play against each other. And so I'm looking at an older format that I might actually give a shot at a GP or something like that if they offer it. And the big problem here is the reserve list is still in play.
Yeah, I was going to say that.
A bunch of these rares are not. Like, so something like Intuition, I'm just kind of like scrolling through what would be on the reserve list. I believe Intuition is. Things like Helm of Obedience.
Gaia's Cradle.
Yeah, and there, I mean, Mox Diamond, infamously. But, I mean, there are entire decks that do not include the reserve list. So, or they're reserve list cheaper cards because the reserve list cards that tended to have spiked are, you know, Legends, Antiquities, Arabian Nights, that kind of thing. So just do yourself a favor and give this a look. I don't know if it can survive long-term because of the presence of the reserve list, which just tends to ruin everything. and it's kind of a bummer that no one's just set up one of these old formats to not include the reserve list so WotC could actually support it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Please don't message me saying, well, that's modern. Because that's not what I'm talking about, okay? But I love that the community is driving these older formats and that we're getting such a sprawl. Mm-hmm. I mean, we haven't talked about it, but the Commander space Brawl has completely taken off. You can find a ton of content on that. Old School's taken off. And I hope this ends up doing something too, because I think the gameplay on this would be incredibly fun. All right, Cameron, we're going to get out of this segment. We're going to talk about some other things. You saw Deadpool 2?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I did not see Deadpool 2, but I want your full review.
Okay.
And then I'll talk about some older games I've been playing. We'll be right back. All right, Cameron, we're in full-on summer movie season. Kicked it into high gear with Infinity War.
Mm-hmm.
You're probably going to see both Deadpool and Solo before I get a chance to.
Oh, that's a bummer. But
that is my life right now. So yeah. I'm interested in your thoughts, man, about Deadpool 2. Where are you at on it?
Well, did you see Deadpool? I'm sure you
saw
Deadpool.
Yeah, I've seen the first one, yeah.
What'd you think of that one?
I liked it a lot.
Okay. I will say, like, without going into spoilers, if you enjoyed Deadpool 1 with all of its jokes, the story, the breaking of the fourth wall, and all of that, you are very much going to enjoy Deadpool 2. It is a really good follow-up successor to the first film in every single way. Like, I will say some of the jokes maybe aren't as quick and quippy as, like, the first movie, but it still does a really good job of bringing this character to such life. So I very much enjoyed it. I very much enjoyed Josh Brolin's Cable. I thought he was really, really strong.
He's having a good summer.
Yeah, he's having a great summer, right? They bring back Colossus and Negasonic Teenage Warhead, both of which are just super great. I mean, like, I think I've talked about this before, but it's so sad that it took, 16 years of X-Men films to finally get an X-Men character that I feel like is totally done justice the way that I believe they should be, the way they are in the comics to what they are in film. Colossus is just so spot on, and as far as, like, character design and the character himself, it brings me joy every single time I see Colossus. And the fact that he doesn't turn off his organic metal that he's always just on as Colossus is hilarious. And they continue to do that in a lot of good ways with all these characters, where this feels more like an X-Men movie than, I mean, look, I loved Wolverine, but it's like, and I like Hugh Jackman's portrayal of Wolverine, but it's not the Wolverine that I know from the comics. Whereas I feel like Deadpool really does service to, like, you know these comic book characters, we are going to give you these comic book characters. Mm-hmm. So yeah, overall, big thumbs up. Very much enjoyed it. My wife saw it. She loved it. And so it's good. It's definitely a great follow-up. And I would say if you're a comic book fan in the least, definitely go see it.
Yeah, I would say that... all the X-Men stuff kind of comes from this root of the first X-Men film,
mm-hmm.
the Bryan Singer film, where it was kind of like X-Men, but with all these compromises,
mm-hmm.
right? And while I feel like we've kind of adjusted to those compromises over time, the fun thing about X-Men is you got glimpses, right? There's just particular glimpses that make you feel like the comic book,
mm-hmm.
but they never go full comic.
Never.
In any of the X-Men movies. And I mean, I feel like that's been an interesting character journey with Logan, that character is not comic book Wolverine at all.
Not at all.
He's toned down in a lot of ways.
Mm-hmm.
I would say, though, that Deadpool, not to be comic historian,
yes,
guy,
please.
Put on my glasses.
Go.
But Deadpool started out as one thing, a cool character design that was a smart aleck, that was meant to be a combination of Spider-Man and Wolverine,
mm-hmm.
right? And very cynically put together and, you know, somewhat of a anti-hero and all these things, but never full-on a comedy character. By the late 90s, he was a the book was a parody book almost, mm-hmm. but it was never a rated R parody. Mm-hmm. That kind of happened to Deadpool over the next 10 years. And the Deadpool that I love is the Deadpool from those the Joe Kelly, Ed McGuinness, late 90s books. I know there's like three people that know what I'm talking about right now. But it served as a parody of other comic books, but it was more like Naked Gun style parody, not, you know, a hard R, which, hey, I don't mind. I'm not like mm-hmm. upset about it, but to me, that's still a little far afield from what I think Deadpool is.
Okay.
But this version of Deadpool is true to the comic of the later era.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I would say about Deadpool is, to me, it's very difficult to sit down and binge 10 issues of Deadpool.
That I agree with, yeah.
He is much more of a confection. It's mm-hmm. I just got done reading something that was way over serious and thought way too much of itself.
Yeah.
For example, Old Man Logan. And so then I thought, okay. Palate cleanser. I'll get an issue of Deadpool in. That's how I've always viewed Deadpool. And so I'm hoping that it's not overbearing, that they don't overdo it, but I'm glad that this character is represented so well. Mm-hmm. I know there's a ton of caveats there. I have mixed feelings about Deadpool.
I do too. Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to talk just really quickly about some old video games. So first of all, Cameron, I'm probably in the last third of God of War, and here's what I'm going to tell you, Mr. I refuse to play a game that everybody says is great because it's not on a Nintendo console. You sick fanboy piece of garbage. Anyway, do you even know where your PS4 is right now, Cameron?
It is literally collecting dust right now. So,
good Lord. Anyway,
I need to turn that sucker on.
No, I think, you know, God of War's Metacritic is like a 95 or 96. It's probably bad, right? No, but here's the thing I was having is I was, the first 2 or 3 hours especially, I was thinking, okay, I see why people say this is great, but I'm not, and I think it's very good, but I don't think it's slam dunk, one of the greatest games of all time. And then you get past the halfway point.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Cameron, it has gone from, okay, pretty good to, this is the best Sony produced game since Uncharted
Horizon?
2, usually. Oh, I think it's better than Horizon now.
Yeah.
I think it's surpassed that finally. Part of it is I finally understand the combat because the combat's very different.
Mm-hmm.
But some of the story stuff that happens, God, it's so hard not to talk spoilers about it. But there was some story stuff that happens, Cameron, that is a longtime God of War fan. It just blew my mind. And I thought this character was super two-dimensional, and that was kind of the joy of it.
Yeah.
You know? But man, they've done some amazing stuff. And Cameron, I think your deep-seated fear about playing this game is thus, that you're going to pop it into your 12-inch television, and you're going to know that you need a different television after you play it for a few hours. And yeah, I mean, stunning stuff. But here's the thing. It's also super duper intense. And when you, I've had some long work days over the past couple weeks. And so when you come home, you're not looking to play a super intense thing in God of War. I want something that's totally brain dead.
Yeah.
Luckily for me, I own the Halo collection. And my relationship with the Halo franchise is super complicated. But I do just want to point people to go back to Halo 1. What a masterpiece, man. Even still,
mm-hmm.
like it's on the Master Chief Collection, which you can get for like $15 if you own an Xbox One, which if you own an Xbox One, I don't know why you wouldn't have the Master Chief Collection, but you can throw it into the old graphics. There's a setting that you can just swap between
out. Yeah.
And I find myself playing it on the old graphics and, what a cool, like, it's amazing to think that game was 2 generations old.
Yeah.
And it still just plays so well. And you still have that moment where you land on the beach. There's a ton of enemies. There's a ton of guys on your side. And the score just booms.
Oh, I was going to say the music in that is just so good. Yeah.
That game is so, especially the first half of it. I think the bottom half is kind of where it falls apart a little bit. But man, it's aged super well. I've also been playing Gears of War 2, which I know your thoughts on Gears of War, Cameron.
Yep.
Not Brown. Your favorite thing. Not your favorite thing in the world. But anyway, both of those games have been really nice, kind of, I don't think about anything for 15 minutes and just go, you know? But theoretically, next week, next 2 weeks, whatever E3 is, we'll probably get the announcement for the next Halo, we would assume, because that's all Microsoft makes is Halos and Gears of Wars.
Yeah. Forza's. But,
yeah. And the sad fact is, Forza's probably better than all the other games
right now,
on their stuff, but people are like, Forza 7? Again? anyway, so that's all for us this week, Cameron. If someone would like to get in touch with you and tell you to play God of War, for crying out loud, where could they find you?
Yeah, that's on Twitter, @Cameron_McCoy.
And I am @CurtisNow. Our official show feed is @SpikeFeedMTG. We will check you guys next week.